This is a Sports Radio 740 podcast on sportsradio740.com.
Hunting, fishing, loving every day. That's the prayer that a country boy prays. Thank God he made me this way. Hunting, fishing, loving every day.
Good morning. Welcome back. Thank you for listening to Cast and Blast Outdoors on this Saturday morning. We really do appreciate your time. Y'all give us a call at 240-9230 or outside the coverage area down in South Alabama. Y'all call us at 1-800-239-9544.
Rob, it's a sort of dreary day outside, but it's still a good day. You need to come down here to the Multiplex, Crampton Bow. We got the gun show. That's right, the gun show right here at the Multiplex, Crampton Bow. Doors open at 9 o'clock. Tickets are $8 to get in, but, hey, parking is free, and you won't get wet on the inside. Last Saturday, Rob, as we do every year in February, the Conservation Department, we have a Conservation Advisory Board. It's made up of 10 members across the state, and we're fortunate to have someone here, right here in Montgomery, that's on that board, Mr. Patrick Cagle. And Patrick, of course, he attended the meeting last week, and we're going to find out some things. Patrick, are you on the line with us?
I am. Thank you for having me.
Good morning, Patrick.
Absolutely, Patrick. You doing okay this morning?
I am. Are y'all?
Yeah, we had a little difficulty there that last 2 minutes of the last hour, but that's all right. We got that figured out. Patrick, y'all had a meeting last Saturday. Can you tell us what went on?
The first thing that happens at the first meeting in February every year is the different departments within DCNR give us a rundown of everything that's gone on so that we kind of get an understanding of you know, what the issues are this year and how things are going. And one of the big things was Game Check. You know, Game Check just completed its first year of mandatory reporting for deer, and the results are in, and they're really positive. We're really encouraged by what we're seeing. So that was one of the big things. Compliance in this first year is really good. You know, we hope it improves every year, but it's about a 35% compliance ratio, which is a really good start for the first year. And it's already, you know, providing some insightful data. It's a tool that, you know, you can't take 1 year's data, especially in the first year, and make decisions on it, but we're really encouraged that it's going to help us, you know, see trends that the biologists can use to help us better manage our resource. 82,000 deer were reported this year, and with that 35% compliance ratio, it means we killed around 235,000 deer in Alabama this year. A little below what the estimates have been. You know, some of the estimates have it as much as 300,000. So we'll be able to see, you know, in the coming years, if that holds true, you know, our biologists may have to adjust their estimate for how many deer were harvested.
You know, Patrick, you know, compared to other states, I know Virginia, they do a similar system just like we do here with Game Check, and they had checked in 168,000, which I think nationwide whitetail deer harvest was down. We had a sort of a funky year as far as the weather goes. There was a lot of key factors in there. But when you compare this being our first year of mandatory Game Check, we had voluntary for a couple of years, but now mandatory. How do we compare with other states on their first year? Do you know that number?
You know, I don't know where they are in their first year. Georgia's a little ahead of us, but they're only in their first couple of years, and they're at about 50%. You know, the really big issue is it's not necessarily what the compliance ratio is. You want it to be as high as possible, but it's vitally important to know what the compliance ratio is. If you're if a statistician can tell you that they're confident that 35% of people are complying, well, you can easily do the math to figure out what the total harvest is. So that's the most important thing about it. You know, it's any survey, the more participants there are in a survey, the more accurate the results are. And we'll see in the coming years the kind of trends we get. That leads me into the other big thing that the Marine Resources Division updated the board and the public attending the Conservation Advisory Board meeting on, which is snapper check. And that is the gold standard when it comes to harvest reporting. I mean, the work that Chris Blankenship's done over in the Marine Resources Division is phenomenal. And he's been able to prove that the federal government is grossly overestimating the snapper harvest every year, which has caused us to have just ridiculously short seasons. This year for 2016, the federal government overestimated the amount of the pounds of red snapper harvested off of Alabama's coast by 1.2 million pounds, which is they overestimated it by 79%. And the really useful data comes in is now mandatory snapper checks in its third year. And they've been able to show that in 2014, the feds overestimated the catch by 81%. 2015, it was 68%. And 2016, it's 79%. So there's
a
trend there that, you know, just showing that it's not a every now and then they're overestimating it. Each and every year they're overestimating it by a significant percentage, which is, you know, causing us to have very short seasons and really preventing a lot of Alabamians from enjoying that incredible resource we have off the coast.
Mm-mm-mm. Patrick, let me ask you something about game check. The thing that I really, and as I understand it, there are certain parts of the state that are really complying and are reporting their harvest. North Alabama seems like they're doing a very good job up there. South Alabama, there are fewer reports on average in South Alabama than there are the northern part of the state. And I really don't get that. Any idea of why certain parts of the state are reporting more so than other parts?
I think that the answer to that, you know, we can't really answer that yet. It's going to take, you know, several years of data to see trends because, you know, are there being more deer harvested in, like, Jackson County, Alabama, and Dallas County, or is the compliance higher or is it some combination? I think that's yet to be seen. You know, I think it's just going to take a couple of years of data to see that. And it's also education. You know, this was the first year.
Process.
Next year, you know, everyone that complied this year should continue to comply. They've seen that it's very easy. Mm-hmm. It takes just a few seconds using the new app, you know, or one of the other tools, the online system or the call-in number. So those folks will continue to report. And as we get the word out, hopefully additional people will continue to as they see that, one, it's very easy. And, two, hopefully they'll see in the coming years this data is not going to be used in any way that's going to harm hunters. It's going to be used in beneficial ways. One of the really interesting statistics that came out of this year is we're harvesting 1.2 doe bucks to every doe. We're harvesting, you know, about if you extrapolate it out, we harvested about 30,000 more bucks than does. That's not a number that the biologists have predicted. You know, we need a few more years of data to see if that, you know, if that's an accurate statistic, but that's going to, you know, change the way the biologists consider how to set dosage.
Yeah, absolutely. I tell you what, Patrick, I think a lot of this, for the first year, I would say it was a big success. You know, it's just like when they did the harvest tag information. The first year, the game warden sort of came out. They were checking people. They would ask about harvest tags. The second year, they got a little bit more serious. The third year, they started popping some people. And anytime you have enforcement, it really emphasizes that product, and which game check being the product. And I think next year, you know, they'll be a little bit stronger on it the next year. And you'll see more participation as that goes on.
Oh, I agree.
Patrick, what about any topics of interest that came up that were controversial that did anybody bring up topics that y'all really weren't prepared for? But what are some of the heated issues that were going on, or were there any?
Deer dog hunting's always been a heated issue. I mean, as far as I, you know, have ever known it, you know, the issues between dog deer hunting club and steel hunters, neighboring steel hunters, has always been an issue. I think that, you know, the board's really focused on trying to minimize conflicts there. And, you know, that's a controversial subject. The way I always approach it is, look, I respect everyone's way to hunt the way they choose, as long as it's legal and ethical and, you know, and done right. Deer dog hunting certainly is. You know, there's a lot of tradition there, so people are very passionate about it. You know, what we have to do is I think, make it clear the board's only interested in solving problems where they exist. You know, most dog hunters follow the rule and don't cause problems. It's that group of bad apples that, you know, tend to give the sport a bad name and cause problems that need to be addressed. And the board's got to do a better job of figuring out what are the best tools to give our conservation officers the right tools to solve the problems without harming the people that are following the rules. Mm-hmm. And I think we're, you know, really looking seriously at options there that will do that. One of them is one of the things that the board's going to consider is a dog encroachment regulation that would basically say that if after two written warnings, the third time your deer hunting dog shows up on someone else's property, you'll get a citation. Hmm. It's an education process. You know, we've got to make sure that the public understands that only applies to deer, to dogs being actively used to hunt deer. Hmm. The other is, look, in my opinion, if your dog shows up on someone else's property three times in one season, you're causing a problem that needs to be addressed. Your way of hunting is now, you know, impacting your neighbor in a negative way. And not only are you being, you know, a bad neighbor and not I would say an unethical sportsman, you're causing, you know, you're breaking the law. And a regulation like that doesn't impact all the people that are following the rules. You know, the permits are effective in minimizing conflicts, but there's, you know, it can be difficult to comply with. It certainly takes a lot more effort on both the department part and the club's part. So the board just wants to look at, you know, what are the best solutions to minimize conflict? You know, what kind of tools do we need to give our enforcement officers to be able to solve the problems where they exist without impacting the rest of the you know, large majority of deer dog hunting clubs that follow the rules?
Patrick, what about, to tell you the truth, this year's conservation advisory board meeting, it slipped up on me. It was the February the 11th, the day after deer season ended. It's not, now that the season's been extended, I mean, is it always going to be that second Saturday in February?
It may be. The issue there is, you know, at the first board meeting, issues are discussed. The public has the chance to bring issues to the board's attention. The department has the chance to bring the issues they feel like the board needs to address. We discuss it, and then, you know, we plan a second meeting. The second meeting this year is March 4th, where we actually vote on it. That way everyone knows the issues that are, you know, that the board may, you know, issue a new regulation or address at that second meeting. The big issue there, the timing, is because we've got some very passionate turkey hunters on the board. And, you know, the public in attendance is obviously very passionate about turkey hunting, and they don't want it to impact turkey season, including youth season.
Right.
No one wants to miss a Saturday morning of turkey hunting for a board meeting, which means we got to have the first board meeting early enough to give a few weeks before the second one, so that we can adjust the issues and be fully informed before we, you know, cast any votes.
Mm-hmm. Where is the next board meeting, Patrick?
It's in Gunnersville at Gunnersville State Park. At the lodge there.
And the date?
March 4th.
So, it'll be set up just like the Montgomery one. I've never been to that one. Will it also begin at 9 a.m.?
Correct. And anyone wanting to address the board needs to show up between 8 and 8:30 to sign up, and they need to bring 16 copies of anything they'd like the board to see. And I always enjoy that part because, you know, we can always anticipate a few issues that are going to come up. You know, we'll get calls. Board members get calls throughout the season about, you know, issues that the hunting public wants to bring to our attention, as well as the fishing public. And then there's always stuff you don't really expect. I like that the board is set up in a way that allows the public to bring stuff to our attention, to get help with stuff. Mm-hmm. For instance, there was a gentleman at this board meeting who, you know, requested some changes to bow fishing regulations that makes sense. You know, going to look into it a little more, but it's just something that would have been hard for him to even get that request to the right person in the department. But it was, he knew where to go. He knew to come to the board meeting to bring, you know, copies of exactly what he's requesting and why, so that bow fishing can be more accessible to folks with physical limitations.
Nice.
Patrick, I want to change subject just a little bit because a lot of folks, you know, we know you're on the advisory board, but you have some political, governmental, your job, you know what's going on when it comes to the state of Alabama. And, of course, the legislature in. Has there been anything brought up to your attention about maybe changing season dates for high fence and also anything as far as baiting or supplemental feeding going? Have you heard anything as far as the legislature trying to change it?
As far as seasons, no, I haven't. I'm not aware of any request to set different seasons for high fences. You know, as a general matter, I don't think the legislature needs to be setting hunting season because when the legislature creates a law, it takes another law to change it, and that doesn't give the kind of flexibility we need to do what's best for the resource. It really pulls the biologist out of the mix rather than, you know, they need to be the biggest part. As far as baiting, that's what, you know, what folks at the State House call an evergreen issue. It comes up every year. It's likely to continue, and there's a bill that'll be in the Senate committee on this Wednesday. It's already passed out of the House committee. You know, that's the
Does it have any
longer than I've been alive.
Yeah. Does it have any legs, you think, Patrick, or you think it's just going to die out like it does every year?
You know, I'd have to give it a 50-50 chance. You know, there's folks that are passionate on both sides, you know, and so, you know, beyond that, it's really hard to know. You know, anytime a bill introduced, there's always a chance it'll pass. I just hope that, you know, our lawmakers really, you know, look at the issue from the perspective of what's best for our resource, not what's best for different hunting groups.
I got you. Patrick, what about this? This will be our final question. What about this year, this past year, they determined legal shooting hours, which I think was the greatest thing since sliced bread. Was there any controversy or any thoughts from anybody regarding that, or was that just a non-issue now that it's a law?
Yeah, I don't know of anyone that had any concerns or heartache over it. I think it's more of a housekeeping matter, and I'm with you. I think it's a great thing because, look, we need to you know, write hunting rules and laws in a way that everyone knows what the rules are and it's easy to comply with. And that was very simple. I mean, you simply, you know, we all bring up the, you know, whatever weather app we use to monitor the weather before we go in the deer stand, and it'll tell you what time legal sunset is that day. Add 30 minutes to it, and that's when it's time to unload your gun and come out of the stand. I think it's a good thing.
Yes, sir. Good thing. I'm glad Alabama caught up with that. So many other states have determined legal shooting hours. It's a good thing that the beautiful state of Alabama has done the same. So
Absolutely.
I was for that.
Patrick, man, we appreciate you taking time this morning. Give us a call. I know you're with your family, with your baby. I believe it's Bankston. And then Molly, you got a beautiful wife, great family. But we appreciate you doing what you do with the Alabama Conservation Department.
Well, I appreciate y'all having me on and you know, educating your listening audience about the board and what we do and you know, how they can participate in the process. My contact info for anyone that, you know, has any issues or questions about the board is on the DCNR's website. My cell phone number is area code 334-354-0107. Anyone that's got any, you know, questions or concerns, welcome to give me a call. I'd love to speak to them.
Yes, sir.
We appreciate it so much. Patrick Cagle.
Thank you, Patrick.
That's right. He represents this area on the Conservation Advisory Board, does a great job. We appreciate what he does. If you